All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. This is episode 73. Of course, I'm Combo Breaker 99. All right, y'all, back with another one. Back again with a real quick episode here. Back again with another episode. But I got a few different things I want to talk about here in the world of WMMA. Just wanted to discuss several topics today that I think really help build in the success of a fighter, and more specifically WMMA fighters, because let's be real, you know, the women in the game, they have to work extra hard. You know, they have to work extra hard in the octagon to get recognized. And as far as building their stock, you know, they also have to work hard at that. So they have to stay on it in the gym. And as far as building their brand. So, you know, there's just several things that happen in the past few weeks, about past few months in the world of WMMA and MMA period, that I feel like a lot of the women, they can kind of follow, you know, they can kind of follow this blueprint to success. You know, the first topic I just want to revisit here and just kind of liken it to the theme is Lauren Murphy. You know, Lauren Murphy in her post-fight interview to Valentina Shevchenko, you know, where she discussed Valentina Shevchenko and her comparisons to Michael Jordan. You know, I want to just kind of go back and talk about that. So I pulled up the interview and just kind of go through some points there with y'all. Caitlin Chikagian, you know, Caitlin Chikagian, she finally got her fight. You know, she was on her Instagram kind of begging. She said she's been begging the UFC for a fight and she got it. And you can kind of thank her social media for that. You know, she has to thank her social media. And then I kind of want to segue that into another fighter that could kind of follow her blueprint, Carla Esparza. You know, Carla Esparza is trying to play the waiting game right now. You know, Dana White said that's not a good idea. So, you know, she needs to do something, right? She needs to do something that makes us want to see this rematch with Rose or fight. You know, I talked about this in another video, so I just want to revisit that in this episode. And last, I want to talk about Manon Fiorot. You know, Manon Fiorot, I discussed the interview where she talked about, you know, the dealing with the symptoms of, you know, the 19 and how it affected her performance. But I just want to talk about the good side to it, you know, where she was able to show the heart, the drive, and how she overcame adversity. You know, it may not have been the performance that she wanted, but she looked good, right? She looked good overall. So I want to kind of go back and just kind of look at some key points in that interview, because I think a lot of people still missed it, you know. But yeah, backtracking here, as y'all know, Lauren Murphy, she battled it out with Valentina Shevchenko, and that was her first stoppage loss, right? And Lauren Murphy, you know, she, this was on 266, yeah, UFC 266. And Lauren Murphy, you know, she went back and talked about her performance. And, you know, we all been talking about that since. You know, Lauren Murphy, we've always kind of looked at her as that hard worker type of fighter. Like Cynthia Calvillo said, you know, she doesn't really show anything special. She's just a grinder and a hard worker. You know, so when you go in there with somebody like Valentina Shevchenko, you're going to see the difference in level. You know, Lauren Murphy was on her 5-fight winning streak. Valentina Shevchenko was on a dominant 5 title defense run, right? So right there, you could already kind of see the level. I know some people would say styles make fights, but it's bigger than that, especially when it comes to the champion. But Lauren Murphy, she, you know, she did this interview where she was just discussing what it was like being in there with Valentina Shevchenko. And she said, this is what it's like to face off against the legendary Michael Jordan in a one-on-one basketball game, right? So when I heard that right away, I was like, okay, so this is a humble fighter. You know, this is a humble fighter that's showing the respect to the champion and what level they're on. You know, she's not making any excuses. I know she said some things about her trainer not being there and that kind of having some effects and some possibilities of, you know, pulling out of the fight. But I think she finally realized what the fight was, you know, and who the opponent she was in there with is, you know. So when it comes down to it, she knows that those different things wouldn't affect it. They wouldn't affect her performance. So here's what she said. She was incredible. It was pretty crazy to be in there with somebody at that level, because I never truly competed with anybody at that level. I don't remember the fourth round really. So I guess that's pretty good. It's a bummer to lose. And that's the first time I've ever been finished. I think it was a good stoppage. I was pretty much out of it by the time the referee pulled her off of me. It was definitely not the outcome we wanted. But to be honest, it was pretty cool to be in there with the martial artist of her caliber. That's a pretty cool experience. That must be what it's like to play one-on-one with Michael Jordan, or how the guys feel when they're competing with Khabib, because it's like, holy ish, this girl is really on another level. So that's crazy though, man, because it was like, you know, going into the fight, the buildup and the confidence that fighter had, they knew all along that's just a mask. You know what I mean? They just knew that was a mask. For Lauren Murphy, you know, she talked about how she was a complete fighter, but deep down she knew that the things that she possesses, the tools that she possessed was not going to be enough to face Valentina Shevchenko. She just had to take that shot, right? She just had to go in there and take that shot. And we can understand now why she wasn't really jumping at the opportunity, right? Right. You know, she wanted to get as many fights as she could. And, you know, she was never really one that was really voicing, like, give me that title shot. I want to beat Valentina up. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. She was never really one to do that because she knew what Valentina possessed. And lo and behold, when she got in there, it was everything she thought it was in this zone. So, you know, Calvillo was right on that point, that you can see the big difference. Like, what she has is not going to be enough to deal with her. So with that, that just kind of shows you what some of these other women in the sport of WMMA, they have to do. Like, they have to earn this. They have to earn this type of respect. You know, the level that these fighters at flyweight have to reach, they have to find some way to get to that point where Valentina Shevchenko is. You know, that's the only way they're going to be a challenge for her, or give her a tough fight, or possibly beat her. You know, it takes that work and that discipline in each discipline, if you know what I mean. It takes those three D's I said, you know, dominance, defense, and discipline, you know, and that's a good way for, I think, fighters to really understand it, those three D's. You know, if they go back and listen to what Lauren Murphy said about this fighter, comparing her to Jordan, I think all these other flyweights, they have the same thing on their mind. They have to go back and say, Jordan, she's comparing Valentina to Jordan. Let me go back and, you know, look at the tapes of Jordan, listen to his talk, look at his interviews, look at his practice, his practices, just see what he went through, his body language. Same thing, go with Valentina, look at her post-fight interviews, her pre-fight interviews, her training, and look at the different things that she does. You know, those things that she continues to do, the things that she continues to do outside of the octagon, is what makes her fights look the way they do, as easy as they do, you know. And I know a lot of people, I have some people always disagree with me in videos saying I'm bigging her up too much as a champion, but no, like, she works hard as hell in these training camps for fights. That's why the fights look easy. That's why the fights look easy, because she's doing everything she needs to do. I know it's a combination of that and some of these fighters not really realizing what they need to do too. But Valentina's just showing you, look, this is the complete package right here. You know, some of these other fighters, yeah, they haven't reached that level because they don't put it all together like she does. Some of them have this, but some of them lack that. Some of them have a little bit of this. Some of them don't have that. You know, some of them have that, but some don't have this, you know. So she has everything. You know, that's why she's getting that respect. So if these fighters out here want to get it, they got to earn that respect. And by earning that respect, they got to work. They got to work. And that one thing they really need to do too is to understand is to sacrifice. You know, sacrifice is a big part. You know, you have to understand that some things do have to be put on hold if you want that belt. You know, if not, you can expect to lose to the Bullet or whoever's behind her, or whoever's in front of her, you know, any of those gatekeepers, you're going to lose. Because if you don't put some things on hold and sacrifice those things, then you aren't going to get the outcome that she has. Like, Valentina Shevchenko sacrifices a lot to get a lot. You know, she sacrificed some major things to get where she is. You know, she's always talking about how, you know, she's dedicated to the sport. And one of the things that keeps her dedicated is because, you know, she's not really in these some serious relationships as well. that kind of, you know, put things on hold as far as, you know, getting to the belt. You know, she knows like to get here, the fight game has to outweigh what's going on in my personal life in some ways. You know, yeah, she gets to travel and do other things, but when it comes down to fighting, she's making sure that those type of barriers that you put in front of yourself, like certain types of relationships, you know, she doesn't let that affect her. She doesn't even choose those type of things. It's always about the fight game, you know, and that's the thing, man. Like if you want to be champion, especially if you want to beat her, you have to eat, sleep, breathe MMA. You know, some fighters say they do that, but not all the time. I don't think so. That's why they come up short when they challenge her or they get beat before they even get on a solid streak to get to the title, you know? So yeah, that's one way to look at it. I think for, you know, some of these women fighters out here, you know, go back and look at this interview and just see what Lauren Murphy said about Valentina Shevchenko, the comparisons, and that'll kind of give you an idea of what you need to do as a fighter, you know, to make it, you know. Oh, we got to earn this type of respect. I got to be on another level. Like Lauren Murphy, yeah, good fighter, but to get her to say these type of things about her, you know, you got to be on that top level. You know what I mean? And do the damage you did. First person to stop Lauren Murphy. And then Lauren Murphy, like she said, she was out of it in the fourth round. Like that's how bad the beating was. And that's how blinded she was by the talent, you know? Also watch what Amanda Nunes did to Megan Anderson. I mean, just by body language alone, you know, she couldn't handle that. It was a mixture of starstruck and just fear. So yeah, that's one of the comparisons. I just kind of wanted to go back and kind of like in that. Well, you know, this Jordan comparison was just something I want to go back and put that in today's topic as far as how these women and men, you know, they can find success in the game. You know, they have to really earn that type of respect. You know, they have to really go back and think about what is in my life that's kind of holding me back. What do I need more of? What do I need less of? Right. So, yeah, let me know in the comment section what y'all think about that. Like, even the fact about Lauren Murphy saying that, like, when a fighter feels that way, do they just go on as a career fighter and, you know, not try for the title again? That doesn't sound like a fighter that wants to challenge for a second title run, does it? You know? So, yeah. Moving on, though, Caitlin Chookagian, you know, I talked about this in another video. Caitlin Chookagian, she had taken to her IG and, you know, she basically said that, look, I've been begging the UFC for a fight. Who do you want to see me fight next? She tagged everybody in there and, you know, everybody answered, you know, all her fans were answering, you know, not everybody, but, you know, a good number of fans were putting their suggestions in there. You know, I myself put my suggestion, which is happening, a rematch with either Jessica Eye or Jennifer Maia. At the time, Jessica Eye was lined up to face Andrea Lee, so that was out. So Jennifer Maia was looking like the more logical opponent, even though Jennifer Maia called out Andrade, right? So Caitlin Chookagian, you know, she said, look, I want to fight. I've been begging for one. You know, she's never been one to not want to fight. You know, so she was just putting it out there that, look, hey, who do you want to see me fight to help kind of push her? So, yeah, coming up in January 15th, to be exact, she has a rematch coming up with Jennifer Maia. This is a rematch to their November 2019 fight, which Chookagian won by decision. You know, so this is a good chance for Jennifer Maia to challenge a gatekeeper, possibly get a rematch against Valentina Shevchenko, right? So what do you guys think? You think it'll be the same thing? I'm not really going to talk about the fight now, but do you think Caitlin Chookagian can win that fight, or do you think Maia can learn from her mistakes and win this time? I think the fight is still 50-50, in my opinion. It all depends on what Chookagian and Maia shows up. That's how it is with these fighters that are under Valentina. You know, they tend to be 50-50 all the time. But what I want to talk about, though, really is Caitlin Chookagian and her ability to understand and understand her social media and stay in contact with her fans here. Like, this was a time where you needed the fans because you said you were begging for a fight and you weren't getting it. So what did she do? She had to tell her fans, hey, fans, UFC's not giving me a fight. I've been asking for a fight behind the scenes, but they're not getting it. So who do you want to see me fight? So when a fighter does that, it takes them straight to the source, and the fans, they get to put their input. So when the fans speak, her bosses listen. You know, that's what the beautiful thing about social media, right? That's why fighters need to use it more. Like Kaylin said, look, behind the scenes, they won't give me a fight. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go on my IG. I'm going to tag them. And then I'm going to ask my fans who they want to see me fight. So Dana, McMahon, the UFC sees all these people that want to see Kaylin return, and they're going to give their suggestions. So McMahon, whether they do the matchmakers, they say, oh, okay, let's see. These are the suggestions that the fans want. They do want to see her. It's like over 100, 200 comments. All right, so let's get a dance partner. Let's get her a dance partner that's free in the next couple months. So what do they do? Check it out. Boom, Jennifer Maya. You got a rematch with Caitlin Chikagan. So that's smart. That's smart on Caitlin Chikagan. Shout out to her for doing that. Because, you know, like I said, that's a big part of these women getting fights. I think the women need it more so than the men, you know, because the men are going to get their fights. I mean, there's some special situations, but the men are going to get their fights. You know, the women, they need to stay on it here because, you know, like I said, WMMA, it still has a fan base that, has a very close knit fan base right now, but there's still a lot of men that watch MMA that still don't care for the women. Right. So nobody's really going to be begging for their fights. So yeah, you have to stay on your social media and stay tight knit with the fans that you do have. So with that being said, Caitlin used it the right way. You know, she went on there, said, hey, can I get a fight? They're not helping me. Fans help out in that word. So let's go right into Carla Esparza. You know, this is a fighter right now that is on a 5-fight winning streak, but it doesn't look like she's getting a title shot anytime soon, right? A matter of fact, let's go ahead and pull up her ranking here. I just did a video today. I want to make sure I had the right ranking for Carla Esparza. Well, she's number 3, right? I know since Joanna's exit, everybody bumped up a spot, but let's make sure here. So yeah, Carla is a fighter right now that's without a fight, without a title shot. She's on a 5-fight win streak. Should have got the rematch against Rose before Zhang Weili, but Zhang Weili has the money, has the backing. So yeah, that says it all. Yeah, Carla's number 2 right now. Carla's already up in number 2 with the exit of Joanna. So right now, Carla's doing a waiting game. You know, she says she wants to wait. She doesn't want to really put that in jeopardy and take on another fight, right? And Dana White, he responded. He said, that's not wise. That's not a wise thing to do. You know, he doesn't like for fighters to just sit out and think they can wait for a title shot, whether or not they're on a win streak or not. He said, you might as well take what's at your disposal at the time, and then eventually that can get you the title shot. But once again, she responded and said she's not going to do that. So if she's not going to do that, Carla needs to kind of follow the footsteps of Caitlin Chikagan here. Like, I've seen Carla's Instagram, you know, I follow it, and she's not really one to stay. Matter of fact, let's pull it up here. Like, she's not really one to interact too much with fans. You know, I know some people that have tried to get interviews with her. I haven't, but you know, some people have stated that they try to get interviews, and she doesn't really do too many, you know, which I think right there is a negative. Because like I said, this is something that fighters, especially WMMA fighters, really need to make a practice of, you know, staying close knit with their fan base. Because, you know, WMMA is not as big as regular MMA. It's not as big as the men. So these women, they have to stay tight knit with the fans they do have. Now, Carla Esparza does have 159,000 followers, right? And, you know, she posts up a lot of fight work, her training and different things like that, you know, but when it's coming down to what she really needs to do in these times, she's not really doing it. Like, she's not really getting the whole backing of the fans. You know, I think Carla Esparza needs to reach out to her fans more and interact and just say, look, y'all got my back. I got your back. You know what I mean? Like, I'll do some interviews with y'all. And that'll keep y'all, that'll keep me in the loop. At the same time, I get to interact with, you know, the people that respect me and are inspired by me. Right. So with that, Carla right now, if she's going to do the waiting game, she'll be doing what Caitlin Chikagan is doing. I mean, if she's not the aggressive type or the type to, you know, use, you know, a bunch of negative energy or just like beef type situations, she needs to at least keep her name in the mix of Rose and Zhang Weili right now, you know. And that's what I was saying in a previous video I did when I was talking about Carla Esparza and why Dana White is giving her a hard time right now, is because she's not really recognizable. You know, again, yeah, she has 159,000 followers, but it's not really like loyalty there, like loyalty like Zhang Weili has or even like Rose has. You know, she needs to be in there with the fans, always interacting. And in situations like this, when Dana didn't give her the rematch, she needed to reach out to the fans and say, yo, fans, did you want to see this rematch with Carla, with Rose Namajunas or not? And then tag Dana, tag Mick Maynard, tag the UFC. And then a whole bunch of people would have responded. And then Dana would have saw it. And he would have said, dang, okay, well, I'm still going to do the Zhang Weili rematch, but I got to guarantee that Carla Esparza has to get this next fight. I got to do that now. Cause look, there's a backing behind her, you know, but the way she's moving right now, she's doing good things, of course. You know, she's definitely doing good things as far as, you know, improvement in the octagon. But as far as the outside part, the marketing part, the business part, I think she really needs to be more hands-on with it, with the social media, and more hitting the source, which is her fans. You know, you hit that source, they'll have your back. You know, fans will have your back all day if you interact. And if you do that, that'll probably guarantee her to get the rematch. But now I don't know. Like, Zhang Weili, okay, she was definitely going to get it. Money, country, period, right? But now I don't even know if Carla's going to be second in line at number two, right? Ioana wants to come back in March or April, you know, from my understanding from her interview. So if that happens, they might make Carla and Ioana fight. Ioana voiced opinion in that fight. I don't know why. For Ioana, it doesn't sound right. But I mean, Carla wanted to get back with Ioana, okay. But for Ioana, why would you want to take an easy fight like that when there's Marina Rodriguez? Anyways, Carla might not when there's Marina Rodriguez. Marina Rodriguez 3-0 in 2021, and she's been looking good, and she brings excitement. So Dana might just do it out of spite. He said, Carla, okay, you want to sit back and wait? All right, I'm going to get the active girl. I'm going to get the active contender. Marina might jump ahead. You know, Marina already said that, hey, if I get it, sorry, Carla. You know what I mean? It ain't like she's going to, she says Carla deserves it, but she's not going to like pass up the opportunity, right? So that's something that she has to look at. Carla's got to start looking at this social media thing as a weapon here to get a fight that she solely wants. So I said in my previous video, what Carla needs to do right now is post up a picture of her and Rose in that fight 7 years ago. Even if it was 7 years ago, just post that picture, because it's going to rile up some Rose fans. You know how the Rose fans are. The Rose fans are going to get riled up, right? And when they see Carla Esparza, you know, submitting her in the third round 7 years ago, 2014, for that inaugural strawweight championship belt, it's going to make them feel a certain way. And then the Carla fans are going to say, oh, wow, I remember that. Yeah. And under that picture, Carla needs to say, who wants to see this fight again? Who wants to see us run it back? Do you think the outcome will be the same? Will history repeat itself at UFC, at McMahon, at Dana White? And I guarantee you, if she does that, fans are going to respond. Dana's going to see it. And then they're going to make that rematch for sure. If Rose beats Zhang Weili, that is, you know. So it's right there. It's all right there for Carla Esparza. So like I said, it's not like we saying Carla needs to do anything ignorant, you know, like name calling or, you know, saying Zhang Weili sucks or Rose sucks or I beat her 7 years ago. Watch me do it again. I mean, she could say that, like, yeah, I could beat her again. But just post up the picture to kind of stir up the pot and, you know, ruffle some feathers. Matter of fact, I said the one thing she needs to do is show up at UFC 268 at the press conference, or, you know, at the weigh-in or something, and say, hey, Dana, you know, pull a Julianne opinion. Say, hey, Dana, where do I get my shot? You know, can I get this shot? You know, can I take on the winner of this fight? And then people are going to say, who is this? You know, they'll kind of go back and look, oh, this is the girl that stopped Rose, right? So many of things she could do. Because if you're not going to fight anymore, which you really don't need to, this is the second option. Because there's two things you can do. There's keep fighting and just stay active. But since you already fought five fights, there's one thing left for her to do. One thing left for Carla to do to secure the fight. And that's be vocal. Be vocal. Hit UFC 268. Start posting that old, some old pictures of her and Rose fighting on her IG. And tag Dana, man. Yeah. Got to. So, yeah, let me know, guys, what y'all think, though, man. Like, Carla, she's letting it slip away. Like I said, that's a fighter right there that needs to do what Caitlin's doing. And a lot of fighters need to do that. Stay warm with their fans and just, hey, get that, you know, get that interaction with them and they'll have your back. Yeah, fans will definitely have your back, you know, if you are loyal to them. You know, it's give and take, right? So, yeah, moving on. Last topic here. Manon Fiore, as y'all know, a few weeks back, well, shout out to Manon Fiore. You know, she's actually in the top 15 now. She's number 14 after her win, dominant win over Myra Buena Silva. And let me just make sure. Let me see here. Yeah, that was a few weeks ago, October 16th, you know, and much like everybody else, you know, me studying Manon and seeing all her fights and being a fan of her, I could see that there was a difference in the performance. It was dominant. She did what she needed to do to win, but I could definitely see there was something about her in that fight that wasn't right, you know. And shout out to Jean Michelle a while back, you know, right after the fight, sent me an interview with Manon with French media, France media, and it was in French. So I had to translate the article, and it was a juicy article. It was a nice, detailed, thorough article. I posted a link for y'all to see, you know, and she went in on the different situations that she was in as far as testing positive, the training, the sparring, how she felt in the fight, how she was about dead, but she kept pushing. Just a lot of different things here, you know, as she talked about, and it kind of built up her stock even more. Like, the more I read it, I was more intrigued, because instead of using excuses like, oh man, I could have did this, but my back was hurt. No, I could have did this, but she did this. And, you know, she was dirty. There was nothing like that. You know, there was nothing like that. It was all like, I felt bad, but I kept pushing. I felt bad, but I overcame, you know, legs were gone, stamina was gone, but I still went through the motions to win. You know, that's what kind of built her stock up even more to me and made me become even more of a fan. Y'all already know I'm a fan of, you know, one of the triple threat. But the interview here, I'm going to kind of go through some key points here. The title said, I stayed 5 days lying down. Manon Fiore counts her victory in the UFC 3 weeks after the, positive test. She was sick from the sea. She felt the symptoms, sparring was rough after being removed from quarantine. You know, she was tough, She was feeling the pain. The UFC thought she was asymptomatic, which she wasn't. So after 3 weeks, she was set to return. You know, they thought she was asymptomatic. So they say, all right, after 3 weeks, you should be good. We're putting you back in there. But if they didn't know, she was still feeling the pain, you know. Matter of fact, let's go through the interview here. Let's see. I got to translate it real quick for y'all. And like I said, I already went through it on a live stream, but there's just some good points here. I want to liken it to this episode, man. Let's see. Okay. All right. So she did say, at the time, she resumed training on Monday. They did the sparring again because we had to see where I was at after this period. The first 2 days were really complicated. I managed to spar, but I was in pain all over. It was really hard, but it was getting better day by day. At the end of the week, I thought I had recovered 100%, but that was not, but that wasn't quite it, especially since I had small injuries, because we really sparred all week, which I never normally do. But this was a fight week. So it was all complicated. It was the week of the fight. It was all complicated. It was just hard for her. Okay, I see. Okay. So let's see. So yeah, right there, you know, the sparring right after quarantine was rough on her. You know, she was feeling pain. She wasn't asymptomatic. They said, did you feel a difference about the start of the fight? And what did you feel most about? So this is translated from English, so it's going to be a little off. She said, after the first minute of the fight, I felt it was not as usual. I felt it on my cardio, especially on the muscular level. I was in pain all over. I had trouble sending the blows. I was not released as usual. So yeah, that goes back to what we said. I think we all agree, you know, everybody comes to the channel. Well, myself, first of all, I definitely felt something was off. I could see it in her performance. You know, she was pushing her strikes, like I said, from the first round. And another thing we will talk about is the injury, you know, to the calf, because she did look a little tender there. But one of the things I did say, you know, at the beginning of the round was like, she was pushing some combinations that seemed like were just off. Like she was throwing this right hook that was missing by a mile. It was just too like inner hook. Like she wasn't looping it out enough. Like the right hook was loopy. It wasn't loopy enough. She would turn it in. And then she would like throw these like combinations where she was like pushing her whole body behind it instead of like throwing the rangy shots. Cause you know, Manon is a long fighter. When she throws her 1-2, she can, you know, go pop, pop real quick without getting in the range of her opponent. This one, she was like, she was throwing her whole body behind these shots and they still had not much on it. But yeah, after that first round, you could really see like she was not really huffing and puffing, but it was taking a lot to get these shots off. So yeah, I definitely seen that in there that night. Definitely seen that in there. Let's see what else. Hold on. And so yeah, you could definitely tell that affected her cardio because yeah, she couldn't get the full off extensions. And yeah, you could tell like she must have been in pain because she was sensitive to the calf kicks. Like never really seen her hurt that bad. I know Myra Buena Silva has power, but when she was hit with calf kicks, you could see that it must have really hurting the muscle. That's why she reacted the way she did, you know? So it said, when C affected you, especially at this point, did you hesitate to forfeit this fight less than a month later? She said, yes. Not necessarily for my coach, but because in training and sparring, I won rounds easily. And for my part, I tried to tell him it was harder than usual, but he was having a hard time seeing it because I was throwing the same number of hits. Okay, so her trainer felt like she was good to go because of the, you know, she wasn't showing the pain. Wasn't showing the pain. But she said it was hard. Let's see. Yeah, so she spent 5 days lying down in bed without being able to do anything. And then, you know, she had still had the fever. Let's see. So, yeah, those are the main points. So she said, are you fully recovered? Do you still feel the same? Some difficulty? Physical difficulty. She said there's a bit of everything going down there. So I don't know if it's the C or the fatigue, but yeah, she still feels tired. This was right after the fight. So yeah. And they say, can you make it wait a bit before getting back into the cage to fight to get back to 100%? She said, it's a bit like that. Yes, there, I think I was really I will really rest. I also have a small injury to the shin from the calf kicks that I took during the fight. So I have to go for exams to see exactly what I have. And then we'll see depending on the results, but whatever happens, I have to really rest for 2 or 3 weeks without doing anything. All right. So that was another thing that, you know, I noticed as well, like the calf kicks were definitely doing damage from the first round. Myra Buena Silva didn't land that many either, you know? So that with a combination of her body being tender, you know, they probably did more damage. You know, her body still ached, her muscles ached. So calf kicks definitely did their damage. And after the post-fight interview in the ring, you could kind of see her limping. So everything that you've seen with Manon was pretty much spot on, but I like the fact she didn't make any excuses. You know, she was coming off of the C, you know, and she still had a solid performance and there was some damage done in there. You know, it was an off night. But with that being said, after just going through that interview, I don't think this is a time to be disappointed, you know, especially for her as a fighter. Like, we might say, okay, well, she didn't get the knockout. But me as a fan of the fight game and what a fighter shows as far as still wanting it and dominating in the fashion that they did, I still enjoy it. Because not everybody's going to look 100% or look the same. But if they can go through the motions and get every round in the bag, I'm happy. You know, I wanted to see the knockout, and she did too. You know, I wanted to see the stoppage because that's what I call for. But I know that a fighter won't show up the same way every night. Some nights are like this. So it's not a time to be disappointed. It's time to be proud. You know, most fighters that come in that say they're close to 100% with nothing wrong with them don't even look this dominant. You know, some fighters on their best days don't look this dominant. You know, she still had more than enough to control her opponent, who was very dangerous, you know, full-fledged flyweight, right? And she still handled it well. Of course, by my standards, like I said, I'll call it when I notice something's off. And I did. I said, okay, something looks off. Wasn't making excuses. I just said, she really looked off from what we see. And it wasn't because of the style matchup. Something on her side was not right. And it wasn't, you know. So I'll still tell you that, look, if it doesn't look the same, but it gets it done, I'm impressed. You know, she gave Silva no breathing room. She still showed all of her tools the way she could. You know, her stand-up was in place. Her clinch game was. And let's not factor, her ground game was on point. You know, she still got takedowns in this fight, which her ground game kind of looked a little bit better than her stand-up. So she still had a plan A and a plan. She had a plan A, but she had a plan B and C as well. You know, again, not every fight is going to be a walk in the park. There's going to be days when you're in there for the biggest challenge and something's going to be off, you know, sick or outside influences. It's all in if you have that will and skill combined to stay on task. And, you know, I think Manon, she had her eye on the prize to say, even though I'm hurting, I'm going to give it my all, get this night over with, and just go through my motions and do my thing. You know what I mean? So that's what she did. And she did it in a dominant way still. So we can't really say, okay, this was a night where she was exposed, because some people say that, no, it wasn't nothing about the mind games. We have legit proof here that she was out because she was sick, in pain, right? So other than that, I think that's what you have to do for these fighters now. Again, these women fighters, they want to be dominant. You have to overcome adversity. I think she overcame adversity in herself. Like, wasn't really what her opponent brought to the table that was so dangerous. It was more so the mental battle and the physical battle she had to deal with, you know, the illness, like, because she had just called out of the fight, put it off, or because she had laid down and taken an L. Yeah, she could have did that. But it was in her to say, no, I got to do this. I got to do this. That's what other fighters have to learn. Like, dominance has to take over. You know, dominance, you got to be dominant no matter what. Even if you just push through the night, even if you don't look like yourself, let the dominance take over, and you got it. And that's what she did. You know, I know, you know, she's really a fighter that cares about how she looks and how dominant she is, because at first she was upset with herself. You know, I think every fighter has to be that critic. You know, I think everybody is their worst critic, right? You know, so I think she has to understand that, you know, there's going to be nights like that. And she did. She accepted it now. But yeah, a lot of fighters now, ladies, women fighters now, WMMA fighters, you know, boxers, whoever, y'all want to make it in the game. This is how you overcome adversity. You know, you have to always be on it and understand that there's going to be bad nights, and making adjustments doesn't always mean you have to adjust to your opponent, but to yourself. You know, it's just got to be in you to always want it, and you'll get it. So yeah, based off of this fight and the pain she was in, the sickness, we may not, in the fact that she has to heal up 3 weeks, we might not see Manon challenge for, let's be real, she might not challenge for the title in like another year and a half or two, you know, which is fair, because she's got one more fight on this contract, which she probably won't fight till 2022, which would be smart. You know, she's not going to get a fourth fight in now. It's 2 months late, and, you know, might as well heal up. So after she, in the interview, like she said, after she closes out this contract with one more fight, she's going to sign another 4-fight contract deal, right? So more than likely, she's going to fight 3 fights in 2022, if all goes well, right? So 4 more fights coming, 3 fights in 2022. The 4th fight might not be till 2023. And that 4th fight might be the title, going by what she said. Because let's see, with the desire for a 4th fight in the UFC before the end of the year, she says seems a little short considering all that we've been through, but we'll see. It also depends on what they'll offer us, but I don't think so. And let's see, your contract at the UFC was for 4 fights. That's it. They decided to give me to sign a new one right away for 4 more fights. It's in negotiations at the moment, but I will sign this fight. I will sign this second contract before making my 4th fight. Okay. So she's about to sign a new contract then. So with a total of 5 fights on the horizon, one of those might be a title shot. One of those might be the title shot. That last fight might be the title shot on her 8th fight, huh? What do y'all think? Let's see. Seeing as your career in the UFC starts and the difficulty to find challengers for the champ, let's see, it was cleaned up the category a little. The UFC speaks to you already of an opportunity for the belt during the second contract. Yeah, so she says starting to be in discussions. Don't have the second contract in hand, but it might appear on that. So, wow, she might be having a title. I guess, you know, when that contract comes out, one of them is going to be guaranteed a title shot in some cases, I guess. Correct me if I'm wrong. So she's probably going to see it on there, like the 7th or 8th fight is going to be the title shot. Dang. Okay. And she is in number 14 now, so we'll see. We shall see. Let's see what else. Do you already feel ready for such a challenge? She said, today I am not necessarily ready, but in 3 to 4 fights, yes, I need to accumulate some more experience. Right, exactly. That's respect right there. She didn't try to say I'm ready now or I can beat Valentina now. Three or four more fights. She wants to accumulate UFC experience. I respect that. Yeah. So before we get out of here, let's just look too as well. Like at number 14 now, who could she take on? Let's see. At number 14, climbing that ladder. Like I said, she could fight Jessica Eye when Jessica Eye heals up. You know, Jessica Eye had to pull out of her Andrea Lee fight because she had some type of bad allergic reaction. So there's that fight. The winner of Andrea Lee Calvillo, the winner of Grasso Viviana Arujo, the winner of Taylor Santos versus JoJo, the winner of Caitlin Chikagan versus Jennifer Maia, because everybody's booked right now. Roxanne, as I've heard, right as of this moment, Roxanne is in talks to fight Casey O'Neill in either January or February. So that's another fight that's out. So yeah, she's going to climb the way up the rankings, you know, 3 to 4 more fights. Yeah. She's going to be waiting for the winner of several of these matchups. So let's be real. At number 14, she'll probably be fighting somebody from 6 through 13, right? Macy's taken by Aaron Blanchfield. Yeah. Everybody's pretty much taken right now. Yeah. So 2022 is going to hold the cards. It holds the cards right now. So yeah, man, shout out to Manon Fiore. Like I said, I just want to go back and revisit this interview here and just talk about how she overcame the adversity and how impressive that is to just go through it and say, look, this is part of life. There's no excuses. We're still going to do the fight. We're going to push through it. We're going to win every single round. And boom, that's how we do, you know? So yeah, I probably already dropped this episode, but since it's 73, what do y'all, y'all are probably already answered by now because that episode is going to be out. 72 is a quick one where I just talked about Joanna and her recent interview with Ariel Wani on MMA Hour. And, you know, Joanna was kind of talking about how she didn't care about being taken out of the rankings. Every other fight was pretty much stupid. They were just offering her stupid matchups. I was like, stupid. You know, I said, stupid. Come on. Like, There's nothing but good fights there, right? You know, so to get to her point too, I guess we can say that, you know, there's something you learn in what she's done as well, you know, for these fighters who want to step out of the box and find success. Like Joanna's in that position now because she put in the hard work. Like I disagree with some of the things she says and does. You know, some of the things that she's been doing. I disagree with as of now, but she has laid that foundation to call the shots in a way. I mean, she's still in a position where she doesn't really need have to come back and fight. She wants title shots, but if she doesn't get them, she doesn't have to come back, right? Because she's got money outside of the octagon, right? And that's why I said, going back to what I said in the intro, the importance of building your brand and staying on it, you know, staying one with the fans, staying dominant in the octagon, you know, in training, you know? So yeah, I won't go into all of that anymore because I already did an episode before this, but yeah, Joanna, looking at it in a positive note, you can't take that from her. Like the fighters on the come up can't take that from her, that she did work hard in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. But that middle part, she was very dominant and went on a 5-fight title defense run because she was always dedicated. You know, so that's what these fighters now need to do if they really want to step out of the box, you know, be dominant in the gym, be interactive on your social media, push yourself, push yourself. Don't expect your company to do it. Just because you work for Bellator, UFC, or Invicta, you know, doesn't mean that you don't have a voice. Like just because you're signed under a contract doesn't mean you can't go on the IG and say, hey, I can't get a fight. Yo, fans, who do you want to see me fight? Or you can't go in there and say, hey, well, Dana, I want this fight. McMaynard, I want this fight. You can get on there. You can do it. You know, that's why I say like these fighters, they complain about pay, but maybe to a certain extent, there is an issue with pay. But if you do some smart things with your money and your opportunities, you can build it yourself because you can't expect them to give you lottery money. You know, this ain't boxing. You know, Dana's not going to give you $10 million a fight or even $1.5 million a fight if you're like number 15. You got to take what you get, start stopping some people, get some stoppage bonuses. You know what I mean? Get those $75,000 bonuses for quick finishes and take it into your own hands and make your own moves. Right. So it's not all about, you know, being handed something. It's about taking the opportunity and making it grow. Right. So, yeah, that's my final thoughts, y'all. Feel like this was a good episode. Like always, make sure y'all subscribe, you know, to the YouTube channel, Combo Breaker 99. Subscribe to the show on these platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Tuned In, all of those, you know. Yeah, shout out to my new subscribers as well. And, you know, just leave some comments in the comment section about what I talked about. You know, what do y'all think WMMA fighters have to do to really get recognized? That's a question for y'all. Like, what do they have to do to get recognized to build their stock in the octagon and out the octagon? I think I gave y'all some good examples here. I'll see y'all on the next episode, which is coming quick. So yeah, catch me on that one. Catch me on live stream later. Combo Breaker 99. I'm out. Subscribe. Peace.